Yep, 10-9-8-7-6-5-4-3-2-1. 10-20-30-40.
Closer?
Yeah, perfect.
Good, like that?
Yeah. Great posture.
Thank you. Been working on it.
That's what I try to tell my kids.
Yeah.
Whenever you're ready, Amal.
Are we good?
We're good. All right, let's go.
Elliot, we'll start the podcast today with some janitorial work.
Mm-hmm.
So this is our interview with Jay Beagle of the Vancouver Canucks. And it still does sound a little bit weird when you say Jay Beagle of the Vancouver Canucks, knowing how tightly we've associated with him with Washington for so many years. But we will have a regular podcast a little bit later on this week. But we wanted to get rolling early and present this interview with Jay Beagle of the Vancouver Canucks, who's one of the more, if you don't know his story, one of the more interesting guys around the NHL. Didn't have the traditional, you know, drafted in the first round, walked right into the NHL, became a superstar. He is that guy who's had log after log placed in front of him, and he's leaped over all of them.
Jeff, I think the reason that it is because he is a relentlessly positive guy. It's just dealing with him as a member of the media, and I know you did some of that stuff with him too, is he always seemed to be in a good mood. Even when things were going badly, he would find a way to take a silver lining out of it. And his teammates noticed that, and I think that's one of the reasons they really wanted him around for a long time. The Capitals noticed that, and you're going to see that in the interview. He's just a relentlessly upbeat person that sometimes you want to strangle and say, oh, can you just please stop smiling already? I'm in a foul mood. But yeah, he can't help but drag you out of it.
You know, and it's interesting the way hockey, when you look at his story and how he got there, I would imagine there would have been a number of different times where he would have been given every single reason to pack it in, every single reason to quit, and he never did. In a lot of ways, it is that classic inspirational story.
Just not the way he's wired.
Not the way he's wired. Let's, you be the judge now. This is Jay Beagle on 31 Thoughts, the podcast, brought to you by the GMC Terrain. Enjoy.
Escape between two Montreal defenders. Picking it up is Winnick. Into the left side. Beagle with a shot. He scores! And out of puck it from the score! Beagle banked it off. Lundqvist from behind the goal line. 12:29 to go with the second. And Jay Beagle on the second effort makes it 1-0 Washington!
Closing in. McNabb fires. That one trickles to the line in a diving effort. A wonderful play by Jay Beagle. Saving a goal there for Washington.
And Jay Beagle with a new career high in goals. His 11th of the season. It's in! It's in! He scores! He scores! Jay Beagle has scored! A tip across the goal line with 0.5 seconds left! Are you kidding me?
Well, we actually have the man himself, Jay Beagle, the newest member of the Vancouver Canucks, joining us right now, fresh off signing a 4-year contract.
Beagle's with him. Marcus Granlin cutting it off the left. Beagle deeks. He scores! A shorthanded goal for Jay Beagle. His first as a Canuck. And Vancouver cuts the lead in half.
Elliot Friedman, there is only one player in the history of the game who has won the Kelly, who has won the Calder, and the Stanley Cups. He is our guest, Jay Beagle of the
Canucks. Did you know that, by the way? Were you aware of this?
I was not aware of that until...
You won it last year with the Washington Capitals?
That's exactly it. They said it, I think, game three of the finals, and it was something that, I never even had thought of it. So it's pretty cool.
That is great to be an answer of a good trivia question, not a bad one.
One that's a useless trivia question.
No, that's not useless. That one is a good answer.
Well,
good
that's what, question. Yeah, and it's a piece of history, Jay. And first of all, welcome to the podcast. Thanks so much for stopping by.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
It is a unique piece of history. And, you know, we're seeing more and more, and Alex Burrows was a real touchstone for this as well, although other players have done it. Once upon a time, the ECHL was, okay, I'm just going to put off growing up for a few more years and play hockey and pick up a couple of bucks. But now more and more we're seeing players, you know, starting at the ECHL level, up to the American League and into the NHL more consistently. I know you were only there briefly, but what was your ECHL experience like?
It was awesome. You know, it really was. I went to Boise and I thought it was the NHL. really. I treated it that way. I always have. Every league I've gone into, it's my NHL. It's the highest that I've ever played. I was playing professional hockey, and obviously a blessing to be there. I was so excited and didn't take one day for granted. I just remember getting there and seeing, you know, that first game as I arrived. I think I arrived at like 6 o'clock that night, and we played at 7, and I didn't play that game, and I think there's a bench clearing brawl, and it was just an insane game to watch against a rival. It was just really cool to be there, and then to get, you know, to get in and have that experience and to win a Kelly Cup with them, experience I'll never forget, and it's a huge, you know, stepping stone for why I got to you know, play in the NHL.
There's probably a ton of ECHL players now who watched you win the Stanley Cup last year and became aware of that stat, that are sitting there and saying, I can do that. Like, I'm going to be that guy. That's my dream. And I'm curious, when you were on that path, were most of your family and friends supportive of you, or was there anybody who said, Jay, you know, maybe it's time to find something else to do?
Yeah, no, they've always been supportive. Yeah, it was always supportive, always positive. You know, I never was drafted in any league. So it was one of those things where I just kept playing because I loved to play. Mm-hmm. I really did. I loved to play hockey, and where was the next place I could play? So from college, I got the opportunity to go to Boise, and it was something that, you know, everyone was real positive, excited for me. They you know, I never looked too far in the future. I always was just, you know, living in the moment. And so no one was ever, you know, okay, it's not going to work out for you. You're not that good. So yeah, no, it was always a very positive experience.
Just out of morbid curiosity, because people have asked me, if you hadn't made it in media, what would you do? And I always answer, I'd be a lawyer and I'd be miserable. if you hadn't made it in hockey, what would you be doing?
Electrician.
Yeah?
Yeah.
One of my best friend's father was an electrician.
Yeah. 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 So I actually apprenticed for 2 years mm-hmm. during college. And in the summers and a year before college, and to make money. And I needed to do that. And I had a bunch of hours banked, and that was the backup, you know, even when going to school. I was going to be an electrician, and I still might after my career's over.
I was going to say, do you fix things in your house? Are you handy?
Yeah, I try to be. My wife may disagree. Electrocute myself every once in a while here, but I still try and fix things. Yep.
That's awesome.
See, further to the previous point off the top, Jay's is a fascinating story of getting to the NHL and finding the ultimate success. And I do wonder, because as you mentioned, never drafted by a team before, cut by teams as well. Your hometown junior team. I mean, what was that experience like growing up? Want to play for the Hitmen? Oh, I got cut, Dad.
Right.
What was that like?
That was one of the hardest things. Yeah, that was one of the hardest things.
Did you ever want to quit?
No, I never wanted to quit. But that was one of the harder things to, you know, to take. Like you said, I grew up in Calgary. I got the chance to try out for the Calgary Hitmen. You know, went into it, gave it my best shot. I was, I think, 5'4" at the time, like 5'5". I grew really late, you know, so a late bloomer. So I went in thinking this is like a huge chance, my big chance, and did okay, I guess, but was cut almost right away and was disappointed. I still remember walking out of that room and my grandpa was there and my dad, and they both knew right away when I came out of the room from down the hall. They could tell right away, and I remember my grandpa still walking out and just going like, nope. Like, he walked out before I even got to him. He knew that I'd been cut. So that stuck with me, and that was something that motivated me to continue to get better and to continue to try and play at the next level. And it was also an eye-opener to see what the next level was. I remember Getzlaf was in that camp, and he ran me a couple times, and I'm like, okay, this guy's really big, really strong. A lot better than me. I need to get better. So it was a motivation thing, too.
In the NHL, did you ever run Getzlaf just to get back at him?
No, I haven't. You know, being in the East, I don't play him that much.
Now
right?
You've got so the opportunity.
Now I'm coming, Getzlaf.
You know, you've always had, I think the thing that serves you well is you have a relentlessly positive attitude. And one of the things I wanted to ask you was, so you're in Washington, and you guys always had a good team before you won, but you guys always had the disappointment. And every year, you guys picked yourself off the mat and came back. And every year, you would go through, repeat it, and won. And when it was over, one of the players told me that you were very critical in that. Like, there would be times after they lost, they'd see you and you'd be trying to pull guys together and they'd be like, oh man, I just want to kill this guy right now. I don't want the positivity. But they said it worked. Like, you pulled guys off the mat a lot in your times in Washington. How hard was that to do knowing, I mean, I understand losing sucks. I've never played at that level, but it sucks. And how did you help get that team back?
Yeah, I mean, interesting that you say that because I've never heard that. You know, like that's from obviously an outside perspective. So I haven't heard, you know, teammates never told me that to my face. So that's interesting. I don't know. I think it's just my personality. I think it's just the way I am, the way I look at the game and the way I look at, you know, life, really. I truly do try and take every day and just know that it's a blessing to be in the NHL and that it could be over at any time. So, you know, the ups and downs, things happen. I don't know. I kind of looked at the overall picture, I guess, that it's just a blessing to be here and to give it everything I have, you know, every day. And, you know, when you lose, the sun's going to come up tomorrow. Like, it really is. And, yeah, some guys find that probably maybe annoying to be that positive, but that's just the way I look at it. And that's the way I look at it, you know, at life, really. So I never really looked at it like I'm doing this for the guys. You know, that's just the way I was. I just was being who I am. And if that's what came across, that's really interesting to hear because I've never heard that.
That's the best way to live, Jay. Like, honestly, that is the best way to live.
It's the only way to live.
And further to that point, with your personality, your positive outlook on life, Boudreau, Oates, Hunter, Trotz, which coach resonated most with you?
You know what? Hunter. Yeah. And he was only there for a short time.
Really?
Yeah. But still.
Did you ever tell Ovechkin that?
No. No, but he had a big impact on me.
And, how so? I'm curious.
Yeah, just the style he wanted me to play and what he expected of me. There was no, and not saying that other coaches have mind games because they don't, but he's very direct. Yeah. I think the most direct coach I've ever had. So he would tell me very directly what he expected of me and how I needed to play if I wanted to make a career here, you know, in the NHL. And so, you know, that was big. And so I knew what he expected of me, and I went out and tried to do it to the best of my ability. And I had a concussion that year and came back, I think, 10 games after he had been there. So I wasn't with him for long, but he had a huge impact on my career and also the confidence that he gave me in playing me lots of minutes. I think he was the first coach that gave me over, you know, 15 minutes a game and averaged that and towards the end. And then in that playoffs, you know, I got a lot of confidence from the ice that he had given me and the chances he took on me.
I was not expecting Dale Hunter to be the answer.
Well, you know, in some ways I can see it because, like, I'm with you in the sense, Jay, that I like bosses who are direct. Like, whether you think I'm good or I'm bad, and on Twitter they tell me how bad I am all the time. But I like bosses who, there's no BS. Yep. Like, just tell me what you want me to do or what you need me to do or what you like or you don't like, and I'll sort that out. So I kind of understand that. Plus, also, Dale, even though he was, like, people forget how good a player Dale Hunter was.
Right. Sure.
But I think he can identify with the kind of player that you are.
For sure. Yeah. No, that was another big thing. You know, he knew. He knew what I was going through. He knew the type of player that I needed to be successful in the NHL, and he worked on it with me and was direct, like you said. And, you know, we've had great coaches with the Caps. It was awesome. Trotz, you huge. Yeah. You know, it was huge for me as well. But Dale did have that. It was early on my career, too, you know, with the Caps, which was big because I was still trying to establish myself as an NHL player.
I'm curious. So you win the Cup. You guys are all swimming in fountains and stuff. You're celebrating as much as it was. How did you tell them goodbye? Like, you guys spilled a lot of blood together.
Yeah.
When did you finally tell them that, guys, I'm not going to be here anymore? And how did that go?
You know what? It didn't go good. I'm not good at that. I'm not good at saying goodbye, and I'm not good at... I didn't want a text. You know, I didn't want it to be a text. We still have a group chat that's... Hopefully we never get rid of it. But I'm not a good guy at texting, and especially my feelings. So there was individuals that we texted, and, you know, there was a text. But the main thing, I think, of saying goodbye was when they presented the ring to me, you know, in Vancouver.
Thanks, Big O. Yeah. Appreciate it, boys. Appreciate the standing O. Oh, wow. That's incredible. I mean, it's great to see you guys. Honestly, I saw you guys yesterday, and I truly do miss you guys. You are family to me, and Obviously, we went through something that was incredible and something that we'll never forget, and you'll always have a place in my heart, and I miss you guys, and thanks for being here and for presenting this ring to me and making it special for sure. Thank you.
You know, that's where I actually got to see the guys face to face and hang out with them for a bit. And I was injured, so that made it even, you know, easier for me to mm-hmm. hang out with them because I knew I didn't have to play that day. So I spent some time with the guys, and that's when I, you know, really was like, you know, it was fun. But now I'm moving on. I bleed blue now.
Well, I understand that, but I want to grind you a bit on this one.
Grind me.
So if you call, so obviously you made calls, right?
Yeah.
Was it the day you saw? Was it July 1st or was it before that?
It was after.
It was after it got announced.
After it got announced and after kind of the dust settled.
So who'd you call first?
On the team?
Yeah.
Tom Wilson.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Me and him really close.
Yes. Now
obviously line mates for 4 years and sat beside him, just became really good friends with him. So he was the first guy I talked to on the team.
And how did that conversation go?
It went good. I mean, okay. He was happy for me.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of those things that it's the business mm-hmm. and it's tough. And he and Carly, which are two of my best friends on the team, mm-hmm. were the reason why I couldn't re-sign back there.
Yes.
Really mm-hmm. was. Yeah. And so I told him, thanks a lot. You know, like,
what was the toughest phone call then? Like, what was the most emotional call?
I had an emotional text from TJ Oshie. And I think that text got me. And it was one of those things where it's actually pretty funny because I didn't get it for the longest time. His text. And I saw him in Vancouver and he's like, thanks for texting me back. Like, jerk. Like, and I'm like, oh, I honestly did not get this text. And I came into the US and a text pops in, like from Canada. And I have no clue why my phone, wow, my phone's an iPhone 1. So that's probably why it happened.
Why don't you just get a flip phone or something?
I had a flip phone for the longest time, but.
What's that say on the calendar? What year is this for you?
Yeah, seriously. And I actually got it. And so I got it after he had already told me that he had texted me. And so I think that was the most emotional, you know, after reading that, it was, yeah, the most emotional text.
Yeah, I mentioned off the top a unique way to get to the NHL, the three, you know, championships of the three levels of pro hockey in North America, the three significant ones. Was there something to you that was poetic about winning the Stanley Cup in Vegas? Let me make sure I have my facts straight. Steve Richmond would have been the scout, mm-hmm. Washington Capitals, who I believe was the one scout that really stumped for you and said, I want to talk to this guy. I want to see this guy. I think there's something there in Jay Beagle. And I think your meeting was, correct me if I'm wrong, in Vegas.
Yeah, you're right.
And then you won the Stanley Cup in Vegas. Did that dawn on you at that time? Was that ever in your mind? Like, you know, my pro career kind of started in here with a conversation.
Yeah.
About pro hockey, and here I am winning the Stanley Cup in Vegas of all places.
Yeah, kind of cool. And it didn't dawn on me until obviously after. Like after when the dust settles, everything, like July 1st, everything, and you're kind of all of a sudden everything settles and you start kind of reflecting back on winning the cup and winning it in Vegas and having that conversation with, you know, Steve Richmond, who I owe a lot to just for taking a chance on me and mm-hmm. coming even just to watch me, you know, in that playoff series in Vegas and in the coast, and really cool how that came around.
Who are some of the other, I mean, he was one of them along the way. I mean, there's always people that stand up for you mm-hmm. and, you know, really mean a lot to your career. Who else were some of those people that you look back on? You know what? I couldn't have done it without this person or that person, or who are some of those people?
Yeah, there's so many. I mean, we mentioned him earlier, Bruce Boudreau, took a huge chance on me as well. I mean, I came in, so Steve Richmond gives me, you know, basically a tryout with the Capitals at development camp. And so I go in, and then Bruce and Doug Yankst with Hershey give me that Hershey one-way contract, which, you know, really you don't see ever from a development camp where you get a one-way contract and they take a chance on me. And Bruce was a had a huge impact on my career, teaching wise, and also the way he just took chances on me when I was in Hershey. He would play me over guys that were in, you know, had two-way contracts with the Capitals, and, you know, just gave me ice time and confidence to play my game. And he had a big impact on me obviously there's been so many. It's hard to think back, but if I go way back, our AAA coach in midget, we won the Air Canada Cup.
Mm-hmm.
So Kerry Bracco was our coach, and I learned so much from him that year. I think that was a year where I look back and remember taking huge steps in my development in hockey. And so he had a big impact on me, and the style that I played was a lot because of him.
So free agency week, what's that like as a player? So Sunday they can start talking to you.
Right.
What happened? Like, what was it like?
It's crazy.
So were you overwhelmed more than you thought?
I was. I was still hopeful that I was going back to Washington. And a couple days before that, you know, that date where they can start to talk, we knew that, okay. That's a great thing about Mac. He was always clear with me. He said, mm-hmm. We want you to come back. Obviously, we're going to try, but you know the situation.
So, yep.
So it was one of those things where it was clear that I wasn't going back there, so I had to find a new home. So that was nice to know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just let my agent do the work, and he just would call me. And
that's Wade Arnett, right?
Yeah, Wade Arnett, mm-hmm. who's been awesome. He just would tell me when calls were coming in and who to meet with, who to talk to. And Vancouver obviously was a front runner right away. They were the ones who called first and wanted to meet with me first, flew me in to meet. So when a team, you know, wants to meet with you and see who you are and give you the layout of what's going on in the organization and be that direct and clear with you, that's a huge thing for me, you know, because I honestly treat my organization and my team like family. Mm-hmm. That's the way I look at it. And so when an organization and a team does the same, you know, that I jump on board.
Now, a good agent will always say, don't tell them you want to come because that undermines your leverage.
Yeah.
So I'm curious, like Travis has said that the meeting with you, like you guys clicked pretty quickly.
Yeah.
So what are an agent's instructions to a player when you're doing free agency?
Wade's pretty good, man. He knows my personality. He knows me. He's like, go in and be yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whatever happens, happens. I mean, it's one of those things where eventually, if I'm trying not to be myself, I'm going to slip up. Regardless, I'm going to tell them that I want to come here and I'm interested, you know. So I just went in and just was myself, and that was one of the great things, like, you know, Greeny says, we clicked right away. Mm-hmm. And his vision for the team is the way I want to play, mm-hmm. and my style of playing. So, you know, that's easy to jump on board with, and I was excited. And there were still other teams, obviously, that were calling. But
did your family want you to go to Calgary?
Like, they did, yes, yeah. Yes, yeah, and Calgary was interested, yes. And I was calling. And so that was interesting. That mm-hmm. was hard to navigate through, for sure. But the cool thing was is that I was talking, really it was coming down to teams that were close to home.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't like we were talking about going to Florida, which is a hard thing when you have three kids and mm-hmm. you know, you want them to be closer to home.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, that was a goal. I wanted to go closer to home. If I was going to have to move, I wanted to go closer to home.
Mm-hmm. So what's that feeling like then? I mean, you're with the Washington Capitals organization for so long. What is that feeling when you put the new sweater on?
Really weird. Yeah, it is. It is really weird. Even just going into a new room. I mean, I haven't done that in so long.
Who did you know in the room?
I didn't know anyone. I did not know one guy.
So who's the guy that you look at and say, man, when I played against you, I thought you were a real idiot, but you're actually not a bad human being? It's got to be Roussel, right?
Yeah, and he was new to the room too. Yeah, it was definitely Roos. And like, those are the guys that you're usually closest with too.
Yeah,
like, those are the guys you bond with right away because you want to kill him.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, I'm like, hey, he's a great guy. So you start to bond right away. But yeah, it was Roos for sure.
Mm-hmm. We've done a number, whether it's, you know, regional or certainly nationally, on Wednesday nights doing Vancouver Canucks games. And every time we see number 40, it's spectacular. Elias Pettersson.
Yes.
What impresses you the most about this young man every time he touches the puck?
Yeah. See, you go to the puck right away. I don't. This guy's relentless to get the puck. And that's the thing that honestly impresses me the most, because he's so young. And yeah, his skill is amazing, his shot. He's got a head for the game that is insane. I've played with, you know, skilled players just even growing up or just all through that just don't have that head for it, and they end up, you know, just not playing anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And they end up done. But he's got such a head for the game and is so smart that it's incredible to watch. And his work ethic is insane.
Mm-hmm.
To get that puck back,
yeah.
Like yesterday, even just, you know, you see him dive for a puck to get it back in the ozone.
Mm-hmm.
He blocks a breakout pass, like a shot, to get the puck back.
Mm-hmm.
I've never seen that. Mm-hmm. I've never seen anyone really do that. And he just wants the puck so bad. He's relentless for it. He works so hard away from the puck, and then his skill takes over when he gets it. It's amazing.
What did you think when you first saw him at camp this year?
Gifted right away. I didn't know much about him. They had presented, you know, him obviously when I was trying to sign there.
Yep.
You know, of a prospect that's coming up and that they're really excited about. But I didn't know much about him other than like World Juniors. Yep. You know, mm-hmm. you see him a little bit there, but incredible. He really was with the puck. Just the way he saw the game, you could see it right away that he's a special player.
As you know, there's this huge debate now about, you know, the abuse he takes. And when you're a star player, you're going to take it. And you got hurt in that Florida game, too, where he got hurt.
Yeah.
And then there, you know, last night, and I thought that was at most a 2-minute penalty. But there's certainly a lot of debate about how can you protect a guy like that.
Right.
How can you? Can you?
Yeah, you can. You can. Like, there's things that warrant guys stepping up and answering, you know, the bell and going after guys if that's going to happen. Mm-hmm. You know, if it's going to happen, that's hockey. Mm-hmm. Things are going to happen. We've seen it all through hockey's history. I mean, it happens. And so when it does, we are a team that we know what we need to do. We need to protect him. Obviously, he's our star player. And, you know, when it happens where they get tied up like last night, that's something that I didn't even think it was a penalty. I thought it was two guys getting tied up. He falls awkwardly. Mm-hmm. And that's the game. I mean, that happens quite a bit to anybody, mm-hmm. right? And it's just because it's him and he ends up leaving the game for it that all of a sudden, you know, everyone...
Kill him.
Make a big deal about it, right?
Yeah.
But that's the game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the game. Injuries are going to happen, but when things happen to him that are targeting him, we're going to have to answer and are more enabled to do that. We've done it our whole lives. That's what hockey is. Mm-hmm. You protect your star players, and mm-hmm. especially when they're young and coming into the league and finding their way. So,
faceoffs. You and I had a brief conversation before the interview about faceoffs.
Yeah.
What a job by Jay Beagle winning that draw clean and Holtby clearing the zone. Awesome job by Beagle.
Jay Beagle, very effective player. I'll play one of his role.
Yeah, we mentioned a little earlier, he came into this game winning over 71% of his faceoffs. And I talked to Barry Trotz about it this morning. He said, you know what? He said, just having him in the lineup, he takes so many defensive zone faceoffs, especially on the right circle. He says, we've had the puck more because he wins the faceoff friendly. Now we've got the puck and we can get going.
Jay drives a lot of different things, and obviously the right hand faceoffs is, you know, his trademark, one of the best in the league. But he's one of those guys that you know, talk about all in attitude.
Beagle has been outstanding since joining the Capitals in the second game of this playoff series.
Jay Beagle, so important for Washington for situations like these. Kill a penalty, but wins important faceoffs at key moments.
I am curious because we know referees, from referee to referee, sometimes have different standards when it comes to penalties. Do linesmen have different drops? And if so, do you know them?
I don't. Well, I did. Yeah, I did in the East. So now in the West, I'm seeing a lot different linesmen.
Okay.
You know, you just see different linesmen. And so I'm trying to get to know the linesmen and the way they drop the puck and stuff. But I don't focus too much on them. I try and focus a lot on me, on what I'm doing and my routine going into a draw, my reads, and going off that. So there's little things that you do notice from linesmen where they drop the puck on the circle. You know, sometimes they drop it really close to their body all the time. So you can almost cut the circle in half because they're not dropping it on the far side of the circle. So you can almost cut that circle in half and put your stick in down the halfway point. There's little things like that you do notice at overtime.
Sure.
And draws have always been a big part of my game that I actually love to just watch and study. So I enjoy it.
And true or false, you've never deliberately lost a draw.
Yeah, no, I've never deliberately lost a draw.
But because some coaches believe in that, right?
Yeah, they do. Yeah, some coaches do, and people have done it to me. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, I'll gladly take the one draw. I'll win it.
Any of your coaches ever ask you to lose a face-off on purpose?
No.
Like, they haven't even asked
you? No, they've never asked me. No, there's times where you shoot it forward, which is going to be a loss on the score sheet.
Yeah.
Right? So they're going to give you a lost draw on that. But sometimes the play is to shoot it forward, to shoot the draw forward, and that's the smart play. So I've been asked for that, and I've also talked with my line mates when we're out there, when do they want me to, you know, do that. And in certain situations, I say, you want me to shoot this forward, and they'll jump forward. but I've never intentionally like just not put my stick in there and tried to get my stick on the puck.
Who's the toughest at the draws?
Bergeron.
What makes him so good? What does he do? So we've heard that a lot.
Yeah, fantastic, I mean,
but what is it specifically?
I don't know. He's a righty, so for me, my strong side is on his weak side. Like he's trying to pull it to the middle usually,
yep.
And I'm trying to pull it to the wall on my strong side, and obviously the same on the other side. He'll be on his strong side. I'm on the weak side. So some games you'll get him on his strong side almost 80% of the time. So mm-hmm. I'm almost losing 80% of those draws just because he's so good. Yeah. On his strong side, he's strong. His timing's really good. The way he takes draws, he's got three or four different looks of where his stick positioning is and how he comes over top, or he'll do a sweep, or you know, a slash and swipe. So there's a bunch of looks that he gives you. He's just really good on draws, and so for me, it's really hard. If I'm taking a lot on his weak side, then I know it's almost a guaranteed loss. It's a tough tough thing to do to win a draw against a guy who's that good on draws on his strong side. So.
Washington is a passionate hockey city. All the American cities are pretty different. We all saw last year how much the Capitals fans love hockey. Going from Washington to Vancouver, like those are some of the most passionate fans in the league. And they let me know it when they don't like what I have to say. How does it compare? How does it compare going from a passionate market like Washington to an unbelievably passionate market like Vancouver?
That's what was cool. I really enjoyed it. I mean, I love Vancouver fans. I really do. They are passionate. They're crazy passionate about it, and you want that as a player. You want them to be passionate about their team and the way you know it's being run and the way that it's working. And I'm a guy who stays out of the media. I don't have Twitter. I don't have any of that stuff. So I never hear any of the, you know.
You're smarter than we are.
So, you hear things every once in a while, and I just love the passion that the fans have. I really do. That's what you want.
What was the first time you got recognized on the street? The first time you got recognized?
I think it was at a restaurant. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it was just a guy who walked by and said, good luck, you know, tomorrow night. And mm-hmm. they just kept walking. And so that was pretty cool where it's not something where they're asking for an autograph or just something. It was just like, hey, good luck.
Did they pay your bill?
No.
That would have been really good.
You know, picking up on that point then, too, I've always been curious about this. You get feedback at the rink from fans in a number of different ways. Vocally, a lot of fans will make signs as well. Pay attention to them.
I like to watch, the signs and warm up. I love it. They're never about me, so I'm always just like, who's got the best one today? You know, so.
Which market has the best signs? Which one, like, oh, are we going into Pittsburgh? Oh, they got some
Philadelphia. Yeah, Philadelphia's always got some funny signs. They got some good ones for sure. But, yeah, I don't know. I would say probably Philly's got the nastiest signs.
Would you tell, like, teammates, like, oh, you're getting roasted up there in that section?
Sure. Or when you see a good one, too, you're like, hey, like, are you going to give a stick to that kid? Like, that's a pretty clever sign. So I'm always on best about that.
Last one for me. How much do you look at the ring?
I don't look at it often. Yeah, no, it's gone into a safety deposit box, and, you know, I'll bring it out in 50 years maybe.
So, but, like, when you got it, like, your kids, like,
yeah.
Like, what?
That
did
was
you take
cool.
it home for Christmas or anything like that for family?
So, yeah, I had it at the home for a little bit. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, just to let the kids see it and family, obviously, mom and dad. And
what did they all say? What was that like?
It was pretty cool. Mm-hmm. Pretty cool. They're kind of like me, though. It's the same thing. Like, you don't do it for that stuff, mm-hmm. right? Like, for the ring. You don't do it for that. You don't even really do it for the name on the cup. Mm-hmm. You do it to be a champion, you know? You know, so they're like me in that aspect. It's all cool things, but it's not something, that's not why I do it. That's not why you play the game. It's not for the ring. It's not for even the name on the cup. It's to be the best. And so it's a cool thing to have, and I'm sure I'll bring it out again in the future, but I'll never wear it, you know?
Never?
No, I'll never wear it. It's just, it's something to, I don't know. It's hard to describe. Mm-hmm. It really is hard to describe. I like it. It's obviously a very cool thing to have.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But in another sense, it doesn't mean that much to me.
I understand.
You know what I mean? It's hard to describe.
And last one here. There's a saying, and I'm sure you've heard it plenty of times. Use hockey. Don't let hockey use you. What has hockey done for you? How have you been able to use hockey?
Hockey, well, in so many ways. It's put me in a place where I have met unbelievable people and been able to live my dream, you know, and play a game that I love and make money doing it. Who can who can say that they really truly get to play a game or really love what they do? And I really do love what I do. But just the people that I've met along the way and the relationships and how you can reach out to people and touch people's lives too, just from being an athlete, I think has been one of the cooler things that I've learned throughout this journey. And as I've gotten older, how I can reach other people and give back and to make someone's day, even maybe for 20 minutes.
That's awesome. I think you made a lot of people's days on this podcast. Yeah,
thanks very much, Jay.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Thank you, Steph, for bringing Jay in.
Go, Steph.
Lunchtime.
I'm with Jay Beagle now.
Ah, yes.
And Jay Beagle's got some company. Who do you have with you, Jay?
I got my boy. I got my oldest here, Brant, and Coulter.
I know Calgary's excited for what's happened to you and what's happened over the last 6 weeks. Put this into words, this moment you've waited for.
Yeah, it's incredible. I can't put it into words. I mean, it's an unbelievable feeling. The way we won it today, too. You know, never a doubt in the locker room. We were talking about it in the second intermission, and it's an incredible feeling.
Showed some incredible resilience. Is that your dad over there, I see?
Yes, it is, yeah.
Get him out there. It's Hockey Night in Canada.
Hockey Night in Canada, Dad. Get in here.
All right, Mr. Beagle, this is what you've spent all your time, all the time in the rink, doing everything you've done. What does it mean to share this moment with your son and your grandkids?
It made me cry. So if you can make me cry, it's pretty darn fantastic. Yeah.
And Jay, what do you want to say to your dad in this moment? I mean, all the time your parents put in.
I know. Time, effort, money. I mean, it's incredible. They're the reason that I'm here and I get to be able to live my dream and play the game. It's an incredible feeling. Obviously, you know, he's the reason why I'm here.
You made some incredible plays, including that big pass to Devontae Smith-Pelly, which was a big key goal in this series. Congratulations. Soak up the moment. Enjoy.
Thank you very much.
One Thoughts, the podcast, is brought to you by the GMC Terrain. With cargo space that fits the entire family's hockey bags and available all-wheel drive to keep them safe on icy roads, the GMC Terrain is a compact SUV thoughtfully designed with you in mind. GMC Terrain, we are professional grade. So that's Jay Beagle of the Vancouver Canucks, and our producer mentions at the conclusion of that interview, the main takeaway might be that he still uses an iPhone 1.
How jealous are you that you can meet somebody who doesn't have to do social media, that can just turn off that part of the world?
That'll be me one day.
Yes.
I will be a rumor one day, trust me.
When I am done with this and I realize it's probably not going to be my own call, I will be a ghost.
Yeah.
I will be a ghost. When my career is over, I will be a ghost.
See, guy seems to have his priorities straight, appreciates everything that he has with hockey, everything that hockey has afforded him.
Yeah.
And probably a guy that I would imagine, you know, that young kid that got cut from Calgary Hitmen camp, never envisioned one day sipping from the Stanley Cup, but there it was.
Well, that guy's also not gone, right? I think it motivates him to be where he is. I think there's a lot of things he could have done, as you mentioned, winning those three championships where you could say, okay, I can coast now. I don't need to do this anymore. And he's not that guy. I really liked his last answer about how he's never going to wear the ring.
Interesting, hey?
I like that. And I understand it. Like, I could see myself kind of being wired the same way that I'm a big believer in, okay, you did this yesterday. What are you going to do today? And it's obviously he's wired that way too. I have a healthy respect for that. And to me, the last answer explains a lot of his story and to why he's been so successful.
I understand it completely. Eat the meal, not the menu. He's there to be a champion, not just to wear the ring.
Well, the meal would also probably taste better than the menu.
That's a good point too. Fair enough. What do you think of Jay Beagle as a player? We didn't really talk to him as a player outside of face-offs.
Face-offs. You know what? I think he knows, he knows what he is. He is a guy who's going to win you face-offs. He's a guy who's going to grind. He's going to compete in every shift. He's going to probably will you into some situations, good situations, and get you out of. But I think also he's going to try and set an example. I think the whole thing with Vancouver now, one of the reasons they're suddenly, surprisingly, at least in the playoff conversation, is because everybody's playing where they're supposed to be. When you have Edler back and you have Tanev back and you have Beagle back and now Sutter's back, is you can put guys in positions where when Jay Beagle's out of the lineup and Brandon Sutter's out of the lineup, you're going to have guys do things that you don't necessarily think that they can do or you don't want them to do. Mm-hmm. Jay Beagle's in a situation where you're sitting there, you're like, okay, I don't like where we are right now. I don't necessarily like where this matchup's going to be. I can throw him out there and know at least he's experienced enough to understand what he's got to do or what needs to be done. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a big reason why Vancouver's improved, because they got a lot of veterans there who understand the way things are supposed to be done, and he's one of those guys.
Are the Vancouver Canucks this good? Like, as we record this podcast, we made a lot of references to last night, and that was the game against the Montreal Canadiens. But where are you at right now with the Vancouver Canucks? Expectation was they were going to be looking for the other Hughes
yes.
come June.
And I think even they thought that. Pettersson has elevated them. He has elevated them. And he has changed the direction of the franchise single-handedly. He has changed it. And who knows how long this is going to last. But Markstrom is on a run. You know, how many years now, Jeff, have we sat here and said Jacob Markstrom is going to be a number one goalie?
For the longest time, he was always considered the greatest goaltender outside of the NHL.
And when did we stop saying it? When did it get to the point, maybe was it 2 years ago, where we thought
it
that's
was in,
not going to happen?
It was in Florida.
So now you're in a situation where you're sitting here and saying maybe Ian Clark and Dan Kluche are figuring this out.
The interesting thing about Markstrom, though,
you hope if you're a Canuck fan,
is, and they acknowledge this internally, is he's not someone that's going to play 7 or 8 games in a row.
No.
Like, he's someone that needs to have his dedicated rest. And it's not just he's not going to play back-to-backs, although he just did the Wednesday and the Thursday, but he's someone that's not playing back-to-backs, and he's not going to put a huge strain together. They acknowledge it. He acknowledges it as well, which is why Vancouver's going to need a strong backup.
Well, now Demko gets the chance, right? It's kind of a weird situation. They trade Nielsen, they lose McKenna on waivers to Philadelphia. And this is the opportunity that Demko wanted, and now he's going to get it.
Yeah.
But if Markstrom can stay at this level, and that's a bit of an if, but he's on a great run. If he stays at this level, they've got a chance. And the other thing, too, is Pettersson's injury.
Right.
You know, I mean, you're sitting there, you're worried about it. But the bottom line is he has elevated this franchise just like Connor McDavid elevated the Edmonton Oilers and Austin Matthews elevated the Toronto Maple Leafs. He's a franchise player.
I hope you enjoyed it. That was our conversation with Jay Beagle of the Vancouver Canucks. Thanks to Jay for stopping by on this Friday afternoon. Thanks to Steph Maniago with the Vancouver Canucks for squiring the center to our studios here at CBC. Thanks very much, Steph. And thanks to our producer, as always, the best in the business, Amil Delich.
Except the reason you didn't get a new podcast for 2 weeks was because Amil needed a vacation.
Can you blame him? It's the only sleep he's going to have until the Stanley Cup is handed out.
Wah, wah, wah. We worked.
Tough crowd. Tough crowd. Thanks, Amil. I still love you. Elliot, we're not so sure. Hope you enjoyed the conversation with Jay Beagle. Regular podcasting returns this week.